So I'm so glad that we have here the group Syrinx 22, flutes and recorders and piano, and we just heard them play on Live from Hochstein in Rochester, and wanted to take some time to get to know you and your music a bit more, the story behind it, and anything else that you want to share. And how did you guys get together? This is an unusual and unique combination. What's the origin story?
They're all looking at me. So. Well, the origin story... It has several threads. Raj and I go way back to college days at Pomona College. We were graduated in the same class, and we performed together straight away from when we were first there. And then we kept performing also in Portugal and so forth. When I moved there and in New York and just on and off over the years. And Antonio came into the picture specifically with this group when Raj extended me an invitation to come perform in New York. And I had recently seen Antonio play an amazing recital of mostly 19th century and 20th century music on recorders with this huge array of recorders. And I thought, hey, here's someone that has even more things to blow on tubes than me. And it would be really fun to get together because it was unbelievable playing. And also music that you don't expect to hear on recorder, because basically hardly anyone else does it, and certainly doesn't do it so well. So I thought, I know who would like to do this, and we had talked about getting all of our tubes of various sorts together to play. And so it came down that we both went to New York to play this beautiful concert in Raj, what's the hall, the Lutheran church?
It was the beautiful St. Peter's Church at Citicorp Center, yeah. The modern Lutheran church there.
Gorgeous acoustic, and we played a very nice program of solos, duos, trios, big
five mix-up. Centuries of music in one program.
Yeah, from Van Eyck to brand new music by a Portuguese composer. And then Raj can carry the story from there.
This was 5 years ago, and we thought it would just be a one-off, let's have fun and do this. And a lot of my serious musician friends from New York came to the concert and came up to us afterwards and said, this is not a fluke. You have found something, and you need to pursue this. And so for the past 5 years, we've been pursuing it.
Very neat. So I am wondering about all these different recorders. There's sort of two associations for a lot of people's minds, I think, at least here in the U.S. for recorders. And one, you're probably tired of hearing, but it's the instrument you play in school as a kid in third grade. But the other is early music and historic. So you play a big range for including contemporary music. Can you talk a little bit about how you found your path in recorders?
Yes, of course. Well, it goes back to the days when I was really young. And everyone was playing the recorder in school. Unfortunately, I wasn't, because otherwise I would have hated, like everyone does, because it's not really the instrument you want to hear 30 kids blow at the same time. So I was just at home, and I heard one of these commercials with a Vivaldi recorder concerto on TV, and I thought, hey, that's really what I want to play. So I was 13, and I went to the local music school, and there I was, and I said, I want to study the recorder. So I got a recorder lesson. For the first time, the director of the school was there, and he just said to the teacher, please don't lose any time with this kid because he's not going to do anything in music. So that was actually an extra kick for me to become a musician, because then I really wanted to do it very much. So, and then, yeah, of course, I started like everyone on the disc and soprano recorder. But, yeah, very, very fast. I just passed for the bigger instruments, and nowadays I have a whole range of instruments, and not only Baroque style like, but also modern instruments with keys, like Catherine has, like, I don't know, 200 keys, but I have 5, and that's already a lot to deal with.
Perhaps I can ask both of you, how many recorders do you have, of what sizes and type? And then also, I'm surprised with you, with Catherine, some flutists can sort of go through the world having flute and maybe piccolo, and maybe, but you have this range of instruments, metal and wood.
I actually left several at home. So I have, of course, concert flute, of which at the moment I have two. They're both Powells, a wood Powell and a metal Powell that I've had. The metal one looks like new, but it's 26 years old. And Then I have a piccolo, which, of course, I used in orchestra and also in modern music. Even being principal flute, as I was for 25 years, we surprisingly had to play piccolo a lot. But for me, that was an I ended up enjoying it. It's really a fun, when you have a fine instrument, which is also a PAL, it becomes an instrument and not just a noisemaker. And so I really got into that. And then the alto flute, everybody loves the alto flute because it's just suave and beautiful. And you actually hear it on many, many soundtracks from Hollywood. And that, I also have a PAL of that. That's a kind of a rarity. And then after that, then, you know, you just think, oh, well, how about a bass flute? And so I have a bass flute and a contrabass flute, which is double the size of the bass flute that I played on yesterday. That one, unfortunately, stayed home for logistical reasons. Those are both made by Eva Kingma, who's a Dutch woman who makes a beautiful instrument, specializing in low flutes. And then I'm also learning for the last 7 years or so Baroque flute and now Baroque piccolo, partly in order to play Baroque music with some ensembles that Antonio has, and also because I just love the sound. Apparently, I just really still am in love with blowing on tubes and getting different sounds coming out. And I have a number of quote-unquote ethnic instruments as well, which I don't dominate as nearly as well, but I'm working on it.
And did you have some point where you realized you had to expand your sounds? Maybe, you know, this curiosity, what led you to some of that?
I think the let's say the first thing was having studied briefly, but importantly, with Robert Dick, who's a pioneer in extended techniques, when I was living in New York right before I went to Portugal for 6 months over 30 years ago. I went there for 6 months and never came back. And then also being, I would say, naturally disposed to contemporary music, where those instruments are more and more used. And just the fact that they just have a different character for a flute player, especially being in an orchestra, you're always the top or nearly the top of the score. You're perched on top of everything else. It's really fun to, for instance, in the Mozart that we performed, to be the alto flute, which is the viola part, in the middle, noodling around, doing all sorts of, taking the tune, accompanying, disappearing, coming back, and with the lower flutes being the bass line. It's so much fun. So I find it to be a way to become a more complete musician by discovering all the uses, all the parts of music. And then, of course, there's the technical challenge of, okay, I have this instrument now. Now I have to see if I can learn to play it.
And I know with both of you, and well, all of you, I feel I could definitely indulge in this sort of excitement about the different instruments in the gear, but I do want to take a few minutes to also hear about the recorders and then sort of open back up to the sound of you three together and the way that you've blended this unique ensemble. So is it just a natural part of recorder to sort of expand into all these different
instruments?
Oh,
not at all. People normally, they end up doing early music, which is wonderful, and I do too, but that's it. They don't go after 1750 because it's not an original way of thinking or doing the music. So people will not go further, and which is really a shame because, for instance, this ensemble has everything to fail regarding the recorded mixed with the flute or mixed with the piano. And yeah, and we just embarked in this adventure just to, well, because it really worked well and it's really a lot of fun just to mix our sounds, blend our sounds, even though we have so many differences.
And Raja, as the pianist, how
yes.
Is it sort of different than working with, I don't know, other chamber groups you may have played with, string
completely
players?
Completely different.
Yeah.
Completely different because there's no pre-made repertoire list for our group. It's not like a classic piano trio of violin, cello, piano where you have the so-called standard literature. You have all these great works already written and you decide which part of that you're going to start off by exploring. There's nothing for our group. So either we are transcribing ourselves and searching out pieces that we think would work, like the Mozart that we played yesterday,
And that was really wonderful sounding. And I hadn't realized, I liked the point you made in the notes, that it was already, even when it was being written, sort of played by what was at hand.
Because the clarinet was a brand new instrument at that point. There were very few people who played that at home. So it was published and it said you could play this on violin or and viola or violin and cello or whatever you have sitting around. And that's how it was done. And so we've adapted that freedom. But then we've also been able to work directly with composers to have them create brand new pieces, especially for our combination. We found that they've been excited to play with sounds that they had not yet accessed.
And can you talk about some of the composers and the works that you've worked on and had created for you?
I'll let Catherine talk about Carlos.
Carlos Marecos is a wonderful composer. I have known him. I think a Portuguese composer. I first heard his music, oh my gosh, maybe 25 years ago, and it was a set of folk songs with singer and flute, clarinet, harpsichord, cello, violin, so small ensemble. And the mastery of the coloring of these folk songs was amazing. I was completely blown away. I went because a student of mine was playing, and I went home like, who is this composer? And I must know him, and I must find music and order music made and so forth. And he was quite young then, and now he's teaching at the what we call superior school, meaning the college level music school in Lisbon. Surprisingly, for a country of only 10 million people, and not that many orchestras, there are an inordinate number of very fine composers in Portugal. So we are lucky. And they're all doing their own thing. There's not a school. There's not everybody sounds the same or has to do this or can't do that. It's everybody on their own thing. So Carlos and I go way back, had the honor of playing those particular folk things on his 50th birthday not too long ago. And we also have two folk songs, transcriptions. They're not really folk songs. They're from a pop composer, but orchestrated for our group and colored in the harmonies in a way that is totally Carlos Marecos and that also honors
Zeca Afonso.
Zeca Afonso, who is the star of pop music, not pop, but
folk
singer-songwriter music from the 70s in Portugal. Still
sort of
very,
a
very
Bob Dylan
popular.
Type of character.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So anyway, he's a fine composer, has many works for piano, for choir, for chamber groups, everything. And he's very humble, just doing his job as a musician, making just beautiful evocative music, which I'm sorry we didn't have time yesterday to play. But we played it in New York earlier this week, and we'll be recording it next week.
And then when we have the recording, we'll be able to share it then
with
our listeners.
Yeah, I think you'll understand what I mean. Yeah.
And I love the piece you played by Zoran Zieg. I mean, the too hot at the end, very fun. I was worried for our engineers, but it worked out with the stomping and the shouting as well.
We tested that before.
Apparently, they've heard louder things probably from drum kits.
And then, but especially that second movement, the Karunji. That's when I had to reuse a part later to promote the show. I ended up grabbing part of that because it was just.
It lives up to its name. It's beautiful. Yes.
So yeah, you premiered that work also originally in India then? You've traveled
sort
of the world together?
And he has a policy for the last few years of, let's say, treating himself to traveling to hear the premieres of his works. So he wrote a solo flute piece, which I premiered in Porto, and he came to Porto. And then that was earlier in 2018. And then he decided to come to Bombay to hear the premiere of this piece. So he loves to travel, and it's an excuse. But yeah, his music is very special and goes against what you expect from German contemporary music. And
he's coming to Sydney in February because I will premiere also a piece of his. And we already did those arrangements, and it's it's really amazing. He's really traveling all over the world to listen to the musicians who play his music.
And yeah. there are a lot of people playing his music. Yeah. And he's written all a lot for world. Flutes and recorders
yeah.
separately. Has he written for them together before? Or
was No. Yeah. Well, he writes a lot, really, for recorders.
Yeah.
He comes from a choral and recorder background. But he also was a writer, as I mentioned to you before, mm-hmm. columnist, humor columnist, and has some books published, and comes from a very artistic background, and is a very interesting character. And, yeah, I wrote an interview for there's a magazine, this is amazing, an online classical magazine called Serenade Magazine that comes out of India. And to prepare for our playing his piece, we did an email interview. Partly to make people less afraid of, you know, they see a German name and that he's still living, so they're expecting, you know, post-Stockhausen, and it's nothing like that at all. So it was a little bit to prepare the terrain, but also it was very interesting to ask him questions about his background and how did he find that he fit in or did not fit into this huge German tradition, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be this great recorder community around the world. You mentioned that Zoran is a recorder mm-hmm. player, and you're going to be working, Antonio, here with our own Rochester chapter of the American Recorder Society.
Yes. That was very funny, actually, because yesterday after the concert, there were this bunch of people barging in, and they were so excited with recorders and asking a lot. And then there's this very nice man, David, who opens his shirt, and then he has a T-shirt saying American Recorder Society. And then, oh, we are all friends. And it was, I don't know, 7-8 people who got to know about the concert. And there was a recorder player, so they all came to listen to the recorder player. And they invited me to teach today a masterclass. So that will be great fun.
Wonderful.
An added thing of humor is that for all the recorders that Antonio brought yesterday, he has maybe three times that was only about 1/3 of what he brought on, just on this tour.
Yeah.
So they may be in for an extra surprise today.
Let's say, I'm wondering, with the instruments that you choose and the piece, are you looking for a certain sound or a range of different sounds, or what, perhaps for all of you, beyond the unique instrumentation, what inspires you for a piece, or what are you working towards musically? And that's sort of a big question that maybe is mostly just expressed in the music you make, but sort of I know on your website you talk about looking forward and this create, what does this sort of mean to you?
I think that the fact that we have an ensemble with instruments that normally wouldn't go together, I mean, recorder and piano, recorder and flute,
traditional
instruments,
there.
I think that is a great challenge for us, because we actually first, we are friends, and playing with friends, I think it's very important, because, yeah, the world is so ugly. There are such ugly things happening in our world nowadays that if you can do a beautiful thing, which is music making, and with friends, you get happier. You're happier. So I've said that this type of ensemble doesn't is not known, it doesn't exist. So it is really great fun to make something just to create from scratch, actually.
Because it's really connecting how music used to be, where there was not such a delineation between performers and composers, and where we can participate with the composer or with adaptations of finding a new way to play some music, of mixing the sounds, putting the flute on the low tone, etc. Just freedom. It's artistic freedom.
And there's definitely experimentation in the rehearsal process about yes. trying out different instruments to see which ones either achieve a blend or a contrast, and what the expressive result is, and which one we decide is the one we're going to present to the public.
And I loved, Raj, the sensitivity of your playing, working with these instruments that I think in some ways are, I don't know, do they project as much as others, or the record? I was worried
they
in
can.
A way.
Yeah, no, they can. but certainly one has to be careful when, for example, the bass flute is playing to to listen carefully and make sure one isn't overpowering that. But when they both pull out their, when she has the piccolo and he has the soprano recorder, they're the ones who are most audible.
But also just a really, yeah, it was just, yesterday was really beautiful, the way the music flowed together, the different, with the textures of the instruments. So this collaboration is cross-continent, right?
Yes.
You're not all in the same country most days. So how does that work?
Airplanes.
Airplanes.
Yes, airplanes.
Yes, we all have lots of frequent flyer miles.
And then you're all part of other musical groups and projects as well. Raj, you're in New York.
I'm in New York, yes. I do a lot of teaching and a lot of solo playing as well. And I have a solo recital at Lincoln Center coming up that I play every year, and so I'm looking forward to that. And then I fly over to Lisbon to rehearse with these two. And then we've done a couple of very large tours of India where we've spent 3 to 4 weeks together traveling through all corners of the country.
And what is the concert scene like in India these days? I would not know anything about it in a way.
There's an exploding amount of interest in what they call Western classical music over there. Their pianos are a lot more available. Music schools are sprouting up everywhere. And there are some incredibly hardworking students. And so every city we visit, we do our concert, but I'm also asked to stay an extra day and work with the talented piano students. And it's really exciting to see how hard they're working and the level that they're achieving.
And Catherine, you talked a little bit about the musical scene where you are in Portugal. You said lots of students, lots of a high level of music. Good audience. You know, everyone's always sort of at least here worried about classical music. And when I go to Europe, it feels like there's just people go more casually to concerts.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. It's not considered a thing to do once you've retired or there's a lot of people. Of course, people have their special interests. You know, there's the opera fanatics, and they are absolutely fanatic, which is great. And then there's people that love chamber music. It's the scene there. I arrived there in 1988, and in the intervening 31 years, it's just been a huge explosion. The government has supported especially education of the arts in a way that you in America has not, and has reaped results, I think, far beyond what anyone could even have imagined. When I arrived, it was a country where whenever there was an orchestra formed or an orchestra position, it was typically, not always, but typically filled with a foreigner, an English or a French or American or somebody adventurous from somewhere else. And now 30 years later, we are an exporting country where we export students and we export professional musicians into German orchestras and et cetera, the very top level players, because the music teaching is available not only to people who have the money to pay for it privately, but pretty much to everyone through a whole number of different kinds of schools. And also it benefited from the Iron Curtain coming down. We got many fine players, especially for strings and piano, from the former East Bloc. And in a way, also, I have to say, from the lack of support in a way in the States. In the States, it's sort of all or nothing. And just to give an example of colleagues of mine from Tanglewood, the year I was there, there is an orchestra in Barcelona that has 3 Tanglewood grads as principal winds. So it's also maybe a generational thing. But let's say there's a diaspora of American musicians going to where there's more work. And now Portugal, instead of just absorbing foreigners, is now returning the favor by exporting. So it's been a huge explosion, and the talent was always there, but now it's being supported, and that makes all the difference.
And I wanted to ask all of you before I let you go, do you have any stories from touring or playing together, favorite things, whether it's particularly profound or particularly, those sort of stories you would tell over a drink maybe, although I can't provide the drink.
Mona.
I have a happy story of when we played at Ashoka University north of New Delhi, which is a very fine liberal arts university in India, which is a new thing. They've had lots of professional and technical training, but liberal arts is a newer project over there. And we played for a room full of students who had many of whom had never been to a live music concert. And after our first set of pieces, when we went backstage, I think it might have been Catherine who turned to me and said, make sure to look at the audience. Because I'm always turned sideways, and they're facing the audience. I turned sideways. The students had tears rolling down their faces because they had never experienced the sound of live music filling their bodies and affecting them in that way. And it was so moving to be the people who opened their eyes to something that they had no idea existed. Mm-hmm. And then the reactions that we get afterwards. So that's my happy touring story.
Thank you.
I have a funny story, but it was not with these guys. But I can share it too,
okay.
Because I think it's really very funny. I was this year in January for the first time in Australia, and I was playing a concert in a church, and the church door was open. And then it was lushku-fushku, how do you say that? It's when it starts to get dark. Yeah, I don't know how to say
dusk.
That. Dusk,
yeah.
Lushku-fushku, dusk, okay. And I was playing, and it was Bach. And then I kept playing, but when I'm playing, I'm always just seeing what's happening around. I know where everyone is sitting. I know where who coughed, who talked on the phone. I really see everyone. And then I was playing, and I see a bunch of people just coming out from outside, but actually they were hopping. So it was actually a kangaroo family who came to the church door to listen to the Bach concert. So I was so happy. And it's good I didn't start laughing because, well, I smiled a lot.
Yeah.
But it was so funny. What's that? I recorded it.
Okay, I cannot beat that. No way.
Sorry.
I guess my story is, Raj kind of, it's similar, was also on our first tour in India, was our first concert, was in Delhi at a warm-up concert at a place called the Piano Man, which was basically made to be like a jazz bar.
It is.
Jazz.
It's the premier jazz club in
it's like you walk in off the street and you're in Brooklyn. It was amazing. And so we played a very serious concert with this piece by Morecos and some other some early things. Really our 5 centuries of music program. And the audience was just rapt, even though they were having drinks and so forth. And I think two things. Aside from that the venue was just so gorgeous, and also knowing that the owner had had that place open for about 14 months and had produced 400 concerts in 14 months. So that gives you an idea of the entrepreneurial spirit that they have going that I was completely blown away by. And then at some point, this man, I believe, stepped on stage near the end and asked, how many of the people sitting there, this was the first time that they had heard live Western classical music, and almost all the hands went up. So we really felt like, wow, we're doing a service, and also we're not just playing the easy listening sort of things. And then the other part of it is that in that night and also in the tour, most of the time people would come and say that their very favorite work on the program was the work by Carlos Morecos. And so it shows you how modern music, contemporary, brand new music, does not have to be something that you have to be trained for. It's communicative. And I think that's what we search for as a group, is expression and communication with the audience and showing the pleasure of playing and hearing music, especially live. even though this is the radio. We love radio too.
Yeah, so the engineer who was actually engineering your program yesterday is here to engineer our talk program that starts at noon, so I'm sure we're going to get kicked out in a few minutes. But I quickly do want to cover, you're recording an album though, right? This
yes.
is coming up, so we'll look for that coming soon.
We'll send it to you. Absolutely.
And then what else do you have? So you've toured through, played a few concerts here in New York City and in Rochester and Syracuse,
New Jersey. Philadelphia. Yeah. And we have a concert at the Fundação Orient, which means the Oriental Foundation in Lisbon, who sponsored some of the travel expenses to going to India on the last tour. So in exchange, we're playing a nice
program. So I'll be going
program.
To Lisbon.
The more frequent flyer
yeah.
miles.
More
exactly.
And you'll get to spend Thanksgiving there.
Yes, Thanksgiving
which
in
has
Portugal.
Been a tradition for the last 3 years. We always spend the Thanksgiving together.
Usually in India.
In India. It will be for the first time in Portugal.
And speaking of holidays, this is Antonio's very first
Halloween
in America.
Yes. After doing the master class, I am going to carve a pumpkin.
Well, Catherine, Antonio, Raj, Serengs 22, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mona.
Thank you, Mona.